Okay. Shalom Aleichem, Agut Tevach. And I will turn our attention toward our live participants. Okay, we are in Cheles Halvavas Shar HaBitochen, in the Psicha, in the beginning. We'll recap what we've been seeing now, what the Cheles Halvavas has been doing with us. He's prefacing the subject by telling us what are the various reasons that we need Bitochen, for spiritual purposes and for material purposes. Why? What are the, we'll call it the benefits slash the necessities of Bitochen. So just to very briefly recap what we've seen, he told us that when we started with the spiritual discussion, and the spiritual discussion began with, we've seen meanwhile three reasons why we need Bitochen. Reason number one is because Hashem requires it. We have a relationship with Him. It's supposed to be a live, tangible relationship. We're supposed to be training ourselves to be aware of all of His involvement in our life. And among the other dynamics that we're supposed to be working toward in terms of having a real, live, tangible relationship, one of them is trust. Hashem expects us to trust that He knows what He's doing, that He is focused on us. As we said, we understand that He loves us. He's focused on us all the time and has our best interests in mind, even when we don't necessarily see it that way, even when we may have made other decisions. Let's remember that our five-year-old children would often make different decisions than we would make for them in very, very many situations, beginning from when to get up in the morning and ending with when to go to sleep at night and everything in between, right? We are often going to be on very different tracks. So taking into account that Hashem is guiding us based on not just the here and now, but He is fully in touch with our full span of life, from conception to Be'ezus Hashem, when we're 150 years old, but even beyond, right? He's busy factoring all that in, and that He is also in touch with our neshama. We don't know exactly what our neshama needs when, what exercises our neshama needs when. So Hashem says, again, benefit number one is, why should we have bitachon? Because Hashem expects it of us. Hashem wants, I want you to trust me. Part of our relationship. That was number one. Number two was, I'm sorry. That we move out of our focus the need, the desire to please others, which can often compete with our service of Hashem. This, we've all experienced this. We're not necessarily talking about, should never make anybody feel good. That's not the point. But can often have situations where our feeling like we need to be pleasing others, keeping others happy with us, can compete with the will of Hashem. When a person has full bitachon, nobody else can affect me in any which way, then he can simply move the factor of, well, are other people going to like this? Is this person going to be mad at me, etc.? Moves that out of the way. That was number two. And number three was being able to let go of material concerns where they compete with Hashem's will. We said Hashem wants us to care for ourselves materially. It's a big discussion. But often we feel like, well, I have to do this because even if it's cutting corners in halacha, even if it means lowering my standards, because otherwise, I don't know, I'll get sick, I'll lose my parnasa, etc. So this is another issue of bitachon, where my material concerns come up against Hashem's will. I say, wait a minute, if this is what Hashem wants right now, then He'll care for me. Here, I'm going to let go of these material issues, of these material concerns. And this is what we're up to now. So now we're going to continue, and if you're following in the Sefer, which I always like to stress that if you don't have a Sefer, you'll probably be just fine. But if you're following in a Sefer, we are again in Shara Bitochen in the Psicha, and the paragraph that begins, V'yedoyme ben Nuchas Navshoi. Now, we have the Cheles Halvavas is about to embark on a very interesting exercise, kind of like going in a bit of a tangent. We discussed how a person who has true bitachon is able to let go of material concerns. Now the Chovas HaLevavos wants to bring home to us that the truth is that a person with true bitachon is the most secure, stable person that there is. A person who can feel most comfortable, most secure in life. And what he wants to do now is show us that there really is no other person who can ever feel as secure in his material state as a person with bitachon. It's something of a tangent, and it's an important one. But first we have to understand what he's doing. If you just learn through the Chovas HaLevavos at face value, it almost seems like he goes into a very irrelevant tangent. But now he's going to start discussing, he's going to start contrasting a person with bitachon with an alchemist. What's an alchemist? Alchemist is a person who knew how to turn metals into gold. And this was an illegal business. I don't know if it was some sort of sorcery. I don't know exactly what this was. But it was a famous phenomenon back in those days. And the Chovas HaLevavos is going to be start now a long discussion of why a person with bitachon. Now, an alchemist is theoretically the most financially secure person that you can imagine. Because this is a person that can take any metal he can get a hold of, and plenty of metal is available to us, right? He can take a tuna fish can and make it into gold, and anything else for that matter. So this person, if we're trying to figure who is the most secure person materially, the alchemist would come to mind. Now, what the Chovas HaLevavos is going to do is he's going to spend a lot of time contrasting a person with bitachon with an alchemist. What's he trying to do here? Nobody here is considering going to alchemy. I think that those schools have shut down millennia ago. So what is he doing here? What is the benefit of this discussion? He's really providing us with a model. He's going to be poking holes. You picture the alchemist, the person who can turn, right? His like we said before, his canned foods. He can turn all the cans into gold. Any metal in his house, he can turn into gold. We would think of him as, wow, that person is set up for life. And now the Chovas HaLevavos is going to go and poke 10 holes. He's going to give 10 differences between the alchemist and the Baal Bitachon. He's going to poke 10 holes in the security of the alchemist that you might not think of. If you're an alchemist, you would think of it. It's always like that, right? Alchemists are very aware of the 10 points he's going to make. But anybody looking at an alchemist is just thinking, wow, this person is set up for life. He's going to poke 10 holes in his security. And the purpose being, he wants us to appreciate. Whenever you see a person who looks to you like, wow, this person is set up for life, go through the checklist. Alchemist is just a model. But as we move through these things, we'll see that what he's trying to do is take away the illusion of absolute financial security, absolute financial stability, a person who just has nothing to worry about for the rest of his life. This is what he wants to do now. He wants to take away that illusion. And we'll see, of the 10 things that he's going to list, if you ever encounter a phenomenon of, wow, this person is set up, this person has nothing to worry about, nothing to worry about, take the Chovas HaLevavos' list, go through them one by one. If not all 10 apply, you'll poke 4 holes in it. To bring home the point that if you really want security in this world, there's really only one route, and that is come to a shir on Shara Bitachon. And you know what? And then you have to hope that the Magid shir, along with the listeners, is really going to apply internalizing these things. That is the route to absolute security in this world. So now let's see. A person with bitachon will be akin in terms of his serenity, his tranquility, in his ability to just write off any concerns. When it comes to material matters, lebal ha'alkimia, to an alchemist, he's going to be no less secure than him. Who's an alchemist? This is a man who knows how to turn silver into gold. And he can turn copper and other metals, lekesef, into silver. Through this skill that he is schooled in. The oid, they say it's not just that he will be as secure as the alchemist. a person with true bitachon actually has 10 advantages in terms of security over the alchemist. What are those 10? So now I'm not going to read all of this inside. We'll read the beginning of each one, and I want to move through these quickly. Because, again, the point being not to understand why alchemy is not necessarily the thing you should go into, but the understanding that look at the most secure person you can conceive of, and then go through this list, and you'll see that if you're just operating on the material track, there is now no such thing really of absolute stability. The Tchilasa. Number one is Shebaal HaKimya Tzarech L'Dvarim Miyuchadim HaMelach. He always requires certain things, certain chemicals, certain tools for his craft. Lo Yugma Lo Yidava Zulasa, without which he can't do anything. He isn't necessarily going to have it everywhere. Let's say there's some upheaval and he suddenly finds himself somewhere else. He doesn't automatically have everything he needs with him. He always has to make sure that he has the proper equipment in order to be doing what he needs to do. So that's number one. Whereas, when if a person is operating with bitachon, he doesn't have to worry about any of that. When he's just operating with it, with what Hashem wants me to have, I'll have. You don't have to worry about making sure that Hashem has the conditions to be able to provide you with it. Hashem can provide you with what he wants, however, wherever. Like the Pasuk says, this was the purpose of us being fed man in the 40 years in the Midbar. Leman hoy diacha. The purpose of it was to teach you. Hashem doesn't need bread in order to sustain you. He can do it in any which way. Right? He gives a few examples that we have from Tanakh. And Eliyahu was hiding in a cave from the king and queen who wanted to kill him, Ahav and Izebel. He was hiding in a cave. Where did he get food from? Hashem sent a team of ravens, that's right, to deliver him food from where? From Achav's kitchen. These ravens went into Achav's kitchen on a daily basis, and they delivered to Achav and Izebel, who were out. They were busy seeking Elio in order to kill him. They were busy providing him with his meals every single day. And plenty of other examples that we know throughout Tanakh. So that's number one. Lemaisa. You see, a person who's very secure, he might still depend on certain conditions, which might sometimes be unavailable. Whereas when a person is operating with bitachon, he never has to worry about, are the conditions going to be right? Whatever the situation is, Hashem has the means of caring for him. Hashem has the ways of sustaining him. Okay. Vasheni, what's point number two? Kibala kimya tzorich lamasim ilimalachas. Vayishlam leichef tzayzulas. Alchemy involves all kinds of different processes. The efshashim misur reichom vashonim, there were all kinds of fumes. There were all kinds of different substances that he's dealing with, acids, chemicals, and producing all kinds of fumes, which were very unhealthy. Besides the fact, sometimes it would have to be up through the night in order to make sure that the process was going properly. So yes, this person has a means of parnasa, but it's not a healthy means of parnasa. The fumes can kill. They're not going to kill him on the spot. They might be shortening his life by 25 years just because of the things he's always breathing in. So this is also something to consider. You see a person, wow, this person is well set up. All you see is the paycheck that you think he's getting, right? His bank account. But are there aspects of his lifestyle? Sometimes you'll see that. That is demand that he has to be keeping up in order to be doing these things. That itself can sometimes kill. So, yeah, he's got the money. But what's the expense? the descriptions that they say about John D. Rockefeller, I think he was the richest man in his time, by far. This man was obsessed with his money making, and he had a lot of it. He had a lot of it. There are crazy stories about his obsession with his money making. And just the descriptions of people who interviewed him was that at the age, he was in his mid-40s, and he looked like a man, he looked like an ancient man. He was completely shriveled and wrinkled, and he looked like he was in his 90s. A man at the age of, in his mid-40s, because of the stress that he was imposing upon himself for that supreme value called money. Okay, his story had a continuation, but he ended up switching tracks in midlife, right in the middle of his life. The doctors told him, either you drop it, or you're going to die very soon. And somehow or the other, so there's probably a certain nace about his story that he was able to make that switch. He lived for many more years. And with the last half of his life, he completely dropped his businesses. So that's number one. You see a person who he's set up well, that's something to consider. Is his lifestyle one? Maybe it's something that a person can't really live with.
Well, but people have to do jobless.
Right.
And there are plenty of people who work very hard to just basically make ends meet at great expense to their health.
Right.
Like, I have a daughter who teaches in the Beis Yaakov, and the teachers there are supporting their families, and she how much they're suffering and how hard they're working just to have enough money to keep bread on the table.
Right.
So what do you say about that?
Right. So you know what? The whole subject of Ishtablis is coming up later. It's true. Sometimes people will have to work very, very hard in order to make ends meet. There are places where a person might already be told to draw the line. Ad kedei kach, already don't do. Here, let go. What will be? Have to see what Hashem's going to do. But past a certain point, might not be expected of a person already in terms of ishtatlis. It's hard to know exactly where to draw the line, but I will say that people generally relate to the whole subject of ishtablis as an extremely hazy subject, which has absolutely no clarity. That isn't exactly so. We will see certain guidelines as we go along. But yes, it's true. It's true. Sometimes making it through life is itself something that comes at the expense of one's health. And here, all he's saying is that, you know what? Let's see the next line, and then we'll see if we can put it into perspective, okay? This is going to be a surprising statement, especially in light of a point that you just raised. A person who has bitachon doesn't have to worry about any ailments. He doesn't have to worry about any evil befalling him, including, like we said before, unhealthy things, etc. Doesn't have to worry about any of that. Why? Because a person who has bitachon will never encounter such things. A person who has bitachon will never be hurt because of the profession that he's in. Is that what he's saying here? An alchemist might get sick from the fumes. A person who has bitachon will always be comfortable. He'll work very easily. He'll never get run down. He'll never get exhausted. He'll never get burnt out. That's what he's saying. And here we may be approaching the beginning of an answer to the point you raised, if not a full answer. Why? So that's not what he means. Look at the continuation. Anything that does come his way will just be a cause for joy. And his parnasa will come through tranquility and serenity. Okay? That fit with everybody's sense of reality around you? No? So let's understand what the Chovas HaLevavos is saying. Yeah, sometimes the ishtablis that a person has to do will run him down. When it's clear to us that, okay, but this is the ishtablis that Hashem expects of me, so then my approach is, however we'll slice it, this is for my good. Because again, what does he say? He doesn't say that nothing will come his way. He says, whatever will come his way, he'll rejoice. Now, here we're talking about the ultimate level of bitachon, which is not easy. But let's lay it down. When it's clear to me that this is the ishtablus I should be doing, and it has certain painful parts to it, then what I say is, these painful parts are something that Hashem intended for me, which is good for me. Now, let's take the example of, if we'll use the example of the Beis Yaakov teacher you're talking about. I'm just drawing in a very broad way right now, okay? Let's contrast her with her very stressful efforts to make ends meet with the alchemist who's being harmed by his fumes. The alchemist is being harmed by his fumes, is being harmed just for the sake of having all that extra gold, right? There's no eternal meaning to that, to those fumes that he's inhaling. It's not going to benefit him. It's an expense of having that gold, right? But the fact that he inhaled those fumes is basically a payoff. I'm going to have the gold now, and he's going to die 25 years earlier, and that's it. He's not going to get schar for inhaling those fumes, right? Whereas, take the example of the woman you're talking about. Now, I have to probably stress twice in each shiur that part of what we're doing here is talking when it's easy. Okay? But let's understand. Many of the women leading that lifestyle could choose to have a much easier lifestyle. Right? By having only one child. Or having no children. Or going into professions that are much more spiritually challenging. Okay? And what's she doing? What she's actually doing is she's supporting a family in many cases. In many cases, right? Is a choice to support a family, understanding that that's going to stretch me very thin. Right? In addition, she is deciding to stay in this field and not to go into other fields that might be available for her because here, she's more spiritually safe, right? Etc. Or she feels that this is where she has more of a mission. So now let's appreciate something. This woman is took upon herself, the truth is this is true in general for what we might say in a general way is the lifestyle, the classic lifestyle that Hashem lays down for his people. It's an intense lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that wears a person down. But look at the difference between that and John D. Rockefeller, who wore himself down just in order to get more and more and more and more money that'll end up bequeathing to who knows who. Whereas this person took upon themselves a life of raising a family of Avdei Hashem, which means that every ounce of energy. I was recently speaking to a mother who was a mother of a nice amount of children. And it was one of those situations where all bunch of the different things were coming together, right? A parasha with this kid and a parasha with this kid and a parasha with this kid, all of it coming together in a way that was just very, very overwhelming, right? And the truth is that often what it seems like is that it's just beyond us. And you know, often it is beyond us. Often it is beyond us. And that's basically what you were describing in that situation. But look what's going on. Take a step back and look at what's going on. Hashem put you into a marathon of your entire life. If you were to set up a program of Avodas Hashem on your own, without being told to marry, without being told to have children, without being told any of the things that the Torah imposes on us, we would set something up that, you know, we would consider reasonable for ourselves to keep up with. Hashem says, you know what? It's going to be exhausting. It's going to wear you down. But you're going to be in a marathon of intense, the whole thing is constantly generating immense spiritual profits, much more than you would think yourself capable of because of the lifestyle I imposed on you, right? So this woman, yeah, she is exhausting herself. And again, it's easier said than done. Although, you know, I'm allowed to talk about this too because I kind of volunteered to that lifestyle also in a very similar way. But yes, she's struggling to keep up. And as a couple, they're working very hard, both in terms of making ends meet and in terms of running the house, et cetera, et cetera. Often they feel like it's beyond them. But Hashem is saying, you know what? You can do a lot more than you consider yourself capable of. And I'm setting your life up, Hashem. Each person, Lamaisa, this plays out differently. You can have the person who, this is something that Chavos Alvavis talks about later. Another person won't find the shidduch and say, okay, so am I not having all this? You know, one minute, I'm kind of jumping from one thing to another. Let's finish developing that side of the coin before we move on to the other side of the coin. So what Hashem is saying is, I am putting you up to a program that you would never dream that you're capable of keeping up with. And you know what? You know what? Often it will be beyond you. You will be struggling to catch your tail, but your entire life, every fiber of your energy, every ounce of your energy, every fiber of your being, all of your waking hours are simply put into producing in a very, very grand scale spiritually. Now, having said that, a person has to get the right guidance on where to be able to give themselves the space that they need and what steps might need to be taken in life to try to alleviate the load. But in very many cases, it will be a heavy load. It will be a heavy load. And what is this? This is Hashem saying that, you know what? You're going to live a life. Again, I told you the way my father put it. He said, we're not here for a very long time. The worst cases are about 100 years. And you're going to, Hashem says, what is that? What is that really? That is that brief little period of just setting the stage for afterwards. So Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to impose on you a lifestyle that is going to force you to maximize it, to squeeze so much more out of those 100 years than you could ever dream possible. And you know what? It's stressful, but this is exactly the point. This is a whole different type of stress. This is not the stress of more gold and more gold and more gold, or just stressing so that I'll have a comfortable life, right? It's a contradiction in terms. I'm going to stress so that what? So that I have a comfortable life. This woman is not stressing so she should have a comfortable life. This woman is stressing that the stress itself is conditioning. The stress, is again, easy to say, but the stress itself, all of that stress, everything that she's bearing, if she's capable of this line in the Chavis, if she appreciates the value of what she's doing, right? If she appreciates the value of that tough lifestyle, then it's actually a cause for sasan and simcha. It doesn't take away the difficulty of it. It's difficult. And sometimes she'll crash, right? And sometimes she'll cry. And sometimes she'll feel that sasan and simcha. And the crashing and the crying is all part of that process.
So it says he can rest assured no evil will befall him. So does that just mean the things that we consider evil will say they're not evil because Hashem gave it to me, like Chas v'Shalom, a fatal illness or a car crash or this or that. That's all considered good. Is that?
That's basically the point. Say? It's a tough point to swallow, but that is the point we will be, the Chavis Havavis will be asking of us to swallow as we move through it. This is really the mindset, the adaptation and mindset that the Chavis Havavos is asking us to do here. He's asking us to grow accustomed to the idea that when you really, really reach those levels of bitachon, and again, you know what? We'll stop by practicing it with, you see the way this bench is set up with the metals in between each seat? I think it's also like that, yeah? I don't know how much experience you have. I go to shul a lot. Is an average of once a month, you'll bang this bone. If you're going to shul regularly, on an average of once a month, you'll bang this bone on one of those pedals, and that hurts. It really does. Okay? Average of once a month. You start by practicing there, and things like that. Now, if you don't go to shul, I'm sure that you have similar things. Okay? But for me, I can use that because I know it's predictable. I have it set, I don't even have to remind myself. Once a month, I'll get that bang. Right? I start there and I say, I just got this bang. It can either be a bang, which is aggravating, right? It can either be a bang, or it can be something. One minute. Okay, Hashem, you gave this to me now. I'll take it. You consider this good for me? I'll take it there. I've turned it into a success. It might be the achievement of my day. Now, it's much easier to start with something like that, to start with the small irritations in life, with the small aggravations in life, and to try to swallow it in that way, not to jump to the much bigger things in life, because it's very, very hard to go to those things with that kind of way of thinking. But you can grow into it to an extent of different degrees. It might be difficult to swallow this with regard to everything, but that definitely is the point. Why is the Baal Bitachon secure that no evil will befall him? Because yes, he trains himself to understand that anything that comes my way, Hashem is saying, here's a challenge. It's like the Olympic trainer, right? That if suddenly his trainer, you know, he's running, and suddenly his trainer puts something in his pads. And what'd you put that there for? I was running so well. I want to see you jump over this at a moment's notice, right? So we understand that this Hashem is giving me as an opportunity to gain some spiritual profit, smaller levels to larger levels. And then the ultimate of this is something that, if the Chavos HaLevavos would have used different words, it would have been easier to swallow. If instead of saying anything that comes his way from Hashem, how do they translate it? Will be cause for him for rejoicing and for happiness, right? If he would have instead said, anything that comes his way from Hashem, he will understand is good for him. It would have been easy for us to swallow. Anything that comes his way from Hashem, he will understand is good for him. But the Chavos HaLevavos is exposing us to the top. Anything that comes his way from Hashem, sasang v'simcha. He's thrilled. He's thrilled. He got a bang on, he banged his bone on that. He's thrilled, right? He's fired. Rachman al-Itzlan, he's thrilled. This is, again, this is too tough for us to swallow just as is, to take that and stuff it down our throat. But what we're doing here is breaking open our horizons. This is what we're doing here. This is what we're moving through Shara B'Tachin with that goal, to break open our horizons, to expose ourselves to what those levels are. I'll give you an example from the Gemara. It's such a beautiful example. It says that Hillel was once coming, he was once traveling, coming home after he was away on a trip. And as he approached his hometown, I see there are questions being raised here. Blin nether soon, I'm gonna look at the questions, okay? As he approached his hometown, he heard cries coming from the town. He heard cries coming from the town. Shrieks, something terrible was going on. And he said, Muvtechani Shein Zamid Beisi. He said, I'm 100% sure that those cries are not coming from my house. And he quoted a pasuk about a tzaddik not fearing anything evil. Now, what does that mean? The Shla asks. The Shla asks, so what does that mean? Bad things don't happen to tzaddikim? What does that mean? They said, 100%, that's not coming from my house. The Shla says something so profound. The Shla says that Hillel wasn't saying, I don't think that whatever it is, that nothing like, no such incident can happen in my house. He says, my home, such shrieks wouldn't be emanating from my home. Because a tzaddik doesn't fear evil. I forget exactly the pasuk. Meaning, I've trained my family, they wouldn't be so horrified. They wouldn't be so horrified. Something like that would happen, and they would take it, they would swallow it. They would take it in terms of, oh, this is an opportunity that Hashem is sending my way to raise me even higher. You might be crying, right? It might be tough. But the Am Kedei Kach, those shrieks of desperation, of like the unbridled horror, that wouldn't be coming from my house. So we're all together here. You know, I'm not trying to portray the one who's there. This is how I take anything that comes my way. We're all aiming for this together, right? We're learning the Chavos. I'm not the Chavos HaLevavos. We're learning Chavos HaLevavos together. Chavos HaLevavos is trying to break open our horizons and to expose us to much higher levels. And in a general way, that would be the answer to the question that you raised. Yes, you might see the person as a servant of Hashem, leading the same, the life with the same difficulties in it. But it's approached in a whole different way. The feeling is very different. The perspective on it is so different. These are difficulties with meaning. These are difficulties that it's worth putting myself into, right? In order to gain the benefits that Hashem has in mind for me. And we'll take it a step further. We'll say when an alchemist, if you have a pious alchemist, who consulted with his Rebbe, and his Rebbe said, alchemy is the thing for you. And he said, what about the fumes? And his Rebbe said, this is what Hashem wants you to be doing in life. Don't worry about the fumes. And the same will be true for him. He'll go, he'll suffer from the fumes, and he'll understand that this is what Hashem wants, and that it's good for him to suffer from the fumes. But the Chavos HaLevavos, that's not his discussion here. He's talking about taking the material alchemist. The material alchemist is inhaling fumes that are gonna ruin his health and shorten his life without any meaning to it, except for the fact that In his shorter life, he had more gold. Whereas the person with the bitachon, he may also be inhaling other kinds of difficulties. But for him, all those, just to add meaning to his life, they all just cause him to grow that much higher. And they're raising his levels. They're raising his levels. This is important to understand also, that when we look at people with material difficulty, look at our own lives, to understand that life doesn't begin and end with that. You have to go the next step. Just like we're saying here, you see a person who has it all made. You have to go the next step and say, is his life really perfect? Ask him, right? If you can get him in a candid moment. Is his life really perfect? Ask him, right? You have to also go in the other direction sometimes. You see a person who's struggling financially very, very much, and you think, wow, this person has a lousy life. Sometimes you have to approach that person also and ask them, how's your life? You might hear that besides for those financial struggles, there is so much fulfillment. There's so much meaning. Life doesn't begin and end with those financial struggles. Sometimes it'll be a stress that could take completely over, but this is exactly what some of this is coming and telling us. 1 minute, you're living a life of meaning, and that involves struggles. So take those struggles into that whole equation. This is part of the meaning in my life. Now, sometimes you should be making changes in your life. Here's an issue of discretion. It's an issue of getting the right guidance, etc. But sometimes when it's not a possibility, so this is what it is. Okay, now, so I think we've begun answering the question. Have we completed answering the question? I don't know if we can. But I think that this at least gives us the direction with which to approach it. And this, again, is what we find, again, in these words of the Chavis. He feels completely safe against any evils. Why? Not because nothing uncomfortable will ever happen to him. Not because nothing painful ever happened to him. But because, again, we're talking about that top level. We're talking about Hillel. Okay? Whatever does come his way from Hashem, he'll take it with joy, with happiness. Hashem is feeding me a painful pill. I must be doing wonders for my neshama. I'm going to swallow it. And his parnasa is coming to him with calm. Again, this doesn't mean that now he's going to have an easy time making parnasa. What it means is that he's not going to stress over it. It will come with difficulty. Sometimes it might not be there. But again, when we're talking about the ultimate Baal Bitachon, he's still tranquil. So some of us is asking us to swallow a lot in one shot. You know what? We can allow ourselves to swallow it piece by piece. Like I said, we start by trying to get ourselves used to these concepts with the smaller aggravations in life. Start training ourselves to think of these terms. Try to think in your life throughout the week. What's an example of those little minor aggravations that aren't like, you know, the earth-shattering things, but they're irritating. They're irritating. And think to yourself, okay, you know, the kid who consistently spills the milk, I'm talking about my stage of life, but the kid who consistently spills the milk, or the husband who consistently forgets to put away, whatever I sometimes forget to put away, but whatever it is, you decide, okay, I'm going to take that as an example. This is not something that's too big. It's something that I can approach and say, you know what? If this is coming my way, I'm going to take it and swallow it and say, Hashem, this is in some way enhancing my neshama that's the real me. And therefore, the more willingly I swallow it, the more its effect is. You know, there's sometimes different pills you're supposed to take in different conditions. Dafka before eating, dafka after eating, etc. So here, the condition is, yeah, Hashem is giving you a pill. The more willing you swallow it, the more acceptance you have when you swallow it, the more it will actually do for you. this was point number two about comparing him to the alchemist. The point being that even the most financially secure person, if you're only thinking in material terms, there will always be drawbacks. Whereas the person with bitachon, there are no drawbacks because the drawbacks themselves are part of the benefit that Hashem has given. So here we have now if there are questions now, I have a question here on the chat. Oh, so here we have somebody addressing the example that was given before about the teachers killing themselves, I understand. Shouldn't this woman's husband get a job? Doesn't the Torah obligate a man to support his family and not a wife to be supporting? Okay, Rabbi Isai, a 10-year series on this? Or do we try to do this on one foot? Okay, so let's try to address this inadequately on one foot. And then maybe in the future we'll have a 10-year series. Sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes we have to appreciate this. Again, just like, I'm coming back to the point that we said before. Again, Rabbi Isai, this part is not going to be on the test. This is an optional part. Anybody who wants to leave at this point, please feel comfortable to just do so.
Nothing to do with the
question. What's that? Okay. Every family has to be living with proper guidance. Every family has to be living with proper guidance. But I'm coming back to the point that we said before. Just like you can't look at a person who seems to have it made and assume what meets the eye is it, right? You also have to turn the other way and say, well, man, maybe there's more to it. Maybe the husband and wife made a choice together that, yes, we are going to forfeit a comfortable life for something that we want even more than that. They're both in it together. When we see somebody killing themselves, we automatically assume, well, they're the victim, and why isn't the other person? But 1 minute, we're talking about people who got together for an ideal. You know what? I should take a step back and say that, first of all, let's not automatically associate it with people whose husbands are sitting and learning. You have plenty of women who are killing themselves while their husbands are also killing themselves in whatever job it is. So that's number one. You don't automatically get away from it by saying, well, let the husband go get a job. It's all too common that, everybody's killing themselves and trying to keep up. And that often goes back to the fact that, again, if you opt out of the Jewish lifestyle and you say, you know, so I'll just have 10% of the kids, that would be much easier. But you know what? Here again, you're giving up on certain comforts and you're committing yourself to a life of having a very hard time catching your tail because you want to be living up to a higher ideal. So you have couples who feel that they are capable of taking on additional ideals. And again, this is something that each couple needs to be attuned to each other, and they need to be in touch with getting the right guidance. But we can't automatically assume that because someone is struggling, that means that the whole picture is off. Yes, they might have made a conscious decision to struggle because they want this ideal, because they feel that it's imbuing their life with meaning that they might not be able to get otherwise. So again, we're not saying this is a rule, but we have to understand that, yes, sometimes the answer will be, this woman, her husband should go get a job. Sometimes the answer would be, oh boy, he tried, his wife won't let him, right? And sometimes the answer will be, they both sat together and they decided this is what we want to be doing. Now, you also have to understand that when the woman is killing herself like that, the husband doesn't have easy street either, in most cases. Isn't living on easy street either, right? They are struggling together. So again, am I trying to paint a rosy picture of all of reality? That's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to say is that you can't just say, hey, 1 minute, there's financial struggle going on here. That means that the picture is off. It's complex. It's complex. Each couple has to get their individual guidance, and each couple has to be very attuned to their own reality and to each other. But to move away from the natural assumption that, hey, if there's financial struggle, if there's a squeeze, that means that the picture is off. The picture might be very, very right in many other ways. Life does not begin and end with the financial struggle. Yes, as a rule, it's the husband's job to make a parnasa. That's the second part of the question. Doesn't the Torah obligate a man to support his family, not a wife to do the supporting? This is something that, yes, every man has to be aware of that. Every man has to be aware of that. At the same time, a couple does have the right to make a choice that we're going to forego that right because of something else that we want. But again, I'm kind of conceding that when you see a woman struggling, it's a picture of a woman whose husband not working, which is actually a small percentage You have plenty of families where everybody's struggling together. But, okay, like I said before, this is a very basic smattering of something that is really a discussion for 10 shiurim. And like I said, maybe we'll get to it. Okay. Any other questions? Meanwhile, I only did two readings. Yeah. We will. You can generally consider it a rule that we will do less than we expect.